there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And now for the most powerful hour on radio, here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. 12. That's the number of times the White House altered the CIA's assessment of the Benghazi attack before releasing its statement to the American public. Obamanista operatives inserted words such as demonstrations and removed words such as Al-Qaeda terrorists. The final version is the talking points that UN Ambassador Susan Rice used on various Sunday talk shows to promote the official storyline that the deaths of Ambassador Stevens and three Americans were the result of demonstrations that became violent in response to an offensive anti-Islamic video posted on YouTube. Of course, we now know, as we knew back in September, it was all a big lie. The bombshell revelation that the White House and the State Department colluded to alter the CIA's assessment after State Department diplomat Gregory Hicks told members of the House panel that he was shocked when he saw Ambassador Rice on TV blaming a protest over an obscure YouTube video as the cause of the violence. Last November, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said that the information given to the public in the wake of the attack had been supplied by the U.S. intelligence community. We now know conclusively Mr. Carney's statement was a lie. There are growing demands in Washington that the U.S. Congress appoint a special committee to investigate the Benghazi affair. There are also demands that former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton be questioned under oath about what she knew on the day of September 11, 2012. 62% of the Republican members of the House of Representatives, that's 143 members of the Congress, are now co-sponsoring a bill that would authorize a special committee to investigate Benghazi. Of course, the only thing standing in the way of a special committee investigating Barack Obama over Benghazi is Mr. Obama's golfing buddy, Republican House Speaker John Boehner. In other news about Benghazi, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham is demanding that U.S. Army General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, return to Capitol Hill for a new round of questioning. Senator Graham wants to know why the general assured him that nobody in the military was ordered to stand down and not rescue the Americans trapped in Benghazi. Several State Department diplomats testified this week that U.S. special ops were indeed ordered to stand down. Meanwhile, former U.S. ambassador to the European Union, C. Borden Gray, told Newsmax.com that there is a cover-up underway. Reporters for the mainstream news media met secretly today behind closed doors at the White House with Obamanista officials regarding Benghazi. And if the Obamanistas don't have enough problems already keeping track of their lies, families of U.S. Navy SEALs killed in the August 6, 2011 helicopter crash in Afghanistan are also demanding an investigation. The families are the relatives of the 25 members of the SEAL Team 6 who died when their chopper was shot out of the air. Many of the dead men were part of the SEAL mission that killed Osama bin Laden. Retired General Paul Vallely attended the news conference in Washington yesterday at the National Press Club. General Vallely believes the crash of the helicopter, which was carrying many of the men only 93 days before who had aided in the killing of bin Laden, he said has a constant plethora of lies and deceit. Family members of the deceased soldiers allege unusual details and unanswered questions about the tragedy. The IRS apologized today for inappropriately flagging conservative political organizations for additional reviews and audits during the 2012 election campaign. Many of the organizations singled out by the IRS auditors had the words Tea Party or Patriot on their applications for tax-exempt status. The IRS said it regrets the error and promises to never do it again. Republican leader Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky called on President Obama to investigate the IRS audit of Patriot groups. Senator, really? That's like asking John Gotti to investigate the mafia. Well, I knew it would not last long. I'm talking about the new technology allowing people to use a 3D printer to manufacture guns. First of all, the whole idea of 3D printing is way over my head. Technology is developing much faster than I can track these days. Anyway, a new company called Defense Distributed was allowing people to download the file to use three-dimensional printers to copy guns. The 3D blueprints were downloaded more than 100,000 times, and that's way too much for the gun grabbers to handle. I mean, they're busy right now trying to outlaw old-fashioned guns made on assembly lines in factories. Now we're talking about real-time sci-fi technology enabling people to use 3D printers to make guns. Well, the U.S. State Department seized the blueprints, claiming them as property of the U.S. government. Now, in my view, the State Department does not have constitutional authority to seize private property. Second, the rights of the people who own the blueprints were abridged without any due process in a court of law. And third, this 3D genie is out of the bottle. How do they think they're going to put that genie back in the bottle? 100,000 downloads means 100,000 people are able to copy the blueprint to thumb drives and distribute the thumb drives freely to millions of people. You know, the New World Order boys are busy creating new technologies to control the world, but the problem is they can't control the new technologies. Keep a close eye on the immigration bill moving through the U.S. Senate, the one secretly written by Senators McCain, Schumer, Rubio, Graham, and others. There may be a biometric scanning provision embedded in that massive bill that nobody will read before they pass it. Inside the 800-page bill is a section establishing something called an identity authorization mechanism. What is that? Sounds like a national biometric ID card to me. The bill's language references something called a photo tool. Some privacy experts fear that this photo tool may be a biometric scan of citizens that will be required to get a mortgage, rent a house, obtain a job, go to college, buy a gun, acquire a credit card, board a plane or a train, attend sporting events, log onto the internet, you know, basically to do anything. You'll have to have this identity authorization mechanism. It's all part of comprehensive immigration reform. And that's a good thing, right? Of course, the Big Brother biometric scanning mandate would be arriving in time to coincide with the completion today of the One World Trade Center in New York City. Workers cheered and whistled as they completed the spire on the skyscraper that replaces the World Trade Center towers destroyed by the Illuminati on September 11, 2001. The new One World Tower is 1,776 feet high. Supposedly, the height is in celebration of the American Revolution. My guess is it's in recognition of the Freemason Illuminati New World Order started in 1776 that they hope to complete in 2013. And one final news story before I take a break. New evidence that Nazi leader Adolf Hitler was a homosexual. Doctors who treated the socialist madman were interviewed by the U.S. Army after World War II. Notes from those interviews with the Nazi doctors show that they had written on their notes that Hitler's sexuality was homosex. I'm Rick Wiles. You're listening to True News. Let's take a break. I'll be back in a moment with my guest.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, you're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast.
Are you prepared to meet the challenges and opportunities each day brings? If you're a believer, you certainly can be. Here's today's moment with Charles Stanley.
Would you get in your car and start to work tomorrow morning with no fuel? No. I doubt if many of you would go to work without breakfast. There's something more essential than that. If your heart's not prepared, your spirit's not prepared, you don't start the day with Him, then you have to start it in your own strength with yourself when you should be starting with Him. Why did God say to Joshua, "Joshua, be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord your God's with you wherever you go." And then here's what he said, speaking of the law of Moses, and to us it would be the Bible, "This book, shall we say, of the word of the Bible, shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night. You must purpose to do all that is written therein." That is, the situations and circumstances that come into your life, you find out, what did God say? What is He saying? "Then I'll make your way prosperous. Then I'll make you a success." Now think about it. That's the promise of God. Why do I want to get up in the morning and rush off down the expressway somewhere unprepared in my heart and in my spirit and my soul?
Well, the Pentagon is backpedaling in high gear to dispel reports that anti-Christian bigot Mikey Weinstein has succeeded in coercing the Pentagon into implementing draconian new policies that could have Christians in the military facing a court-martial for the crime of sharing their faith with fellow soldiers. I'm not buying the Pentagon's PR fluff. They've had an ongoing relationship with Mr. Weinstein for years as the military's religious tolerance advisor, so they need to explain that relationship. Among the inflammatory statements made by Mr. Weinstein is his classification of Focus on the Family, the American Family Association, and the Family Research Council as hate groups. Ken Klukowski is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council. He's the co-author of the book, The Blueprint, Obama's Plan to Subvert the Constitution. Ken's on the telephone to give us an update on what is really happening inside the Pentagon regarding religious freedom of soldiers. Ken, what's the latest in this controversy?
Well, the story still continues to unfold, and thank you for having me. Just recently, in fact, it looks like lawmakers are starting to get engaged. Three U.S. senators, Mike Lee, Lindsey Graham, and Ted Cruz, have now sent a letter to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, asking for him to explain the situation. There are also similar efforts now going on the side of the U.S. House of Representatives. So I think lawmakers, this issue has now been brought to their attention. They understand that something is really not right here, and they're starting to look into it. Certainly with what we're seeing so far, the Pentagon, and we want to make it clear, this is a civilian-led Pentagon. This is the Obama-Hagel administration Pentagon. We certainly support everything about our men and women in uniform, including, this is fighting on behalf of countless service members who are people of faith, because they're the ones who are being silenced in this. And they have the same religious liberty rights that we all do. There are certain things, of course, that you cannot say if you're in uniform. You can't criticize the commander-in-chief in an op-ed to the newspaper or something. But you do still have your First Amendment rights to live out and practice and share your faith. And a policy, any policy against that, it's not just bad policy, but it's also unconstitutional. And so I'm encouraged that it looks like Congress, despite the fact that the Pentagon is saying there's nothing to see here, despite the fact that the mainstream media now is refusing to report it, that nonetheless there's been enough of a buzz about this issue that lawmakers have now become engaged, and I would imagine we're going to see more activity over the coming week or two.
That's good. Ken, there is nothing moderate about Mikey Weinstein. I've been aware of this character for years. He absolutely hates Christianity. In fact, he hates God. I mean, he's an atheist. He's He's just a rabbit foaming at the mouth, Jesus-hating atheist. And how in the world did he get the title of religious tolerance advisor to the Pentagon?
I think it's not a formal title, but of course it doesn't matter whether it's formal or not. It doesn't matter that he's unpaid rather than paid. That your underlying point is a very important one, and that is when you have someone who is, as you said, foaming at the mouth, rabidly anti-Christian. You know, we have in my columns on Breitbart News, I link to his own writings, as his public writings, where he says that evangelical Christians, conservative Christians, he calls human monstrosities. He said sharing the gospel is an act of sedition and treason that should be punished. I mean, this he compares having someone in the military share the gospel with you. He compares that to rape, and then says it again separately, sexual assault, one of his advisors. So, I mean, this kind of over-the-top crazy rhetoric, and rhetoric that I think, I mean, for example, comparing sharing the gospel with being raped, I think would be, should be offensive to all Americans, but most especially for feminists. I mean, it's to draw any moral equivalency between those two.
Well, Ken, just
appalling.
Ken, imagine a conservative evangelical Christian with access to the Pentagon, meeting with generals, meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and being able to walk in the halls of the Pentagon and get access to military bases. Imagine a conservative evangelical Christian saying that Jews in the military are human monsters, and that they ought to be tried as traitors, as seditious traitors. I mean, whether they were saying Jews or Muslims or Sikhs, just imagine somebody saying it about another religion. That guy wouldn't last 30 seconds.
And that raises the question, given how long of a paper trail Mikey Weinstein has over the years, given how clear it is, how extreme his views are, and the over-the-top and just hate-filled rhetoric that he chooses to use when talking about Christians, the question becomes, who in the Obama-Hagel Pentagon authorized sitting down with this guy for a meeting? I don't care what the meeting was for. The fact that it was for discussing whether there needs to be new policies on religious expression in the military is really quite disturbing. But the bottom line is, we know that this meeting had at least a half dozen people in it. We know it includes at least one flag officer, at least one general. Someone had to vet this guy, in fact, thoroughly vetted him. Someone had to authorize the meeting and bring all these personnel into it. It is worth finding out, and I hope lawmakers look into this, who said it was okay to meet with this guy, and why in the world would they do so?
And nobody in the Pentagon has denied that he is the religious tolerance advisor. I mean, you would think somebody would come out and say, hey, wait a minute, we didn't give him that title. He put that title on himself.
And it's not a title per se, and we don't know however many. I mean, there's not a post or whatever that carries that specific title. But he is an advisor, an unpaid advisor. He is an advisor because they're sitting down with him for him to provide professional and expert advice on policy development and implementation. So even though it is not an office created by Congress or whatever and has no paycheck that attaches to it or whatnot, he is serving in an advisory role. Now, we don't know. We know there have been at least two meetings, and the first one was back in 2009. So this wasn't anything that started anytime soon. This started shortly after Barack Obama got elected president. And in fact, as I said in a story yesterday, during the Bush administration years, Mikey Weinstein was suing the Pentagon. Now he is welcomed into the Pentagon as a guest to sit down and talk about policy. So, and it started shortly after, in fact, 1 month after Barack Obama was sworn in as president. So we know there's been at least two meetings. How many more have there been? Which Pentagon personnel were involved, and who in the world thought it was a good idea to sit down with the guy who is on such a crusade, an anti-Christian crusade, in the military? And the fact that they are taking advice from him, that they are willing to receive it, is just deeply disturbing. Just because this person, among other things, is so extreme, is so inflexible, makes it clear that he believes there should be no chaplains in the military, there should be no religious faith whatsoever in the military. He praised an army officer, Lieutenant Colonel Jack Rich of Fort Campbell, praised Colonel Rich's comment that service members who are suspected of being supportive of conservative Christian views, and he named FRC, he named AFA as organizations. He said, be on the lookout for people who seem to be sympathetic with the politics or policy goals of those organizations. He said, because their values are not Army values, and he goes on to say that they should be excluded from military service. And Mikey Weinstein came in and expressly said that the nation should be applauding Colonel Rich for those comments. So here he is endorsing the position that conservative Christians should not even be allowed to serve in uniform at all. And yet the Pentagon is willing to sit down with this guy.
Yeah, Colonel Rich's comments, this was my very next question I was going to bring up to you, because he's the 2nd Battalion, 506th Infantry Regiment commander at Fort Campbell. And as you said, he sent out an email to 36 officers on the base, telling them to scour the base looking for members of hate groups. And as you said, he listed some of these hate groups, and they're conservative evangelical Christian organizations.
That's exactly right, and I think they're probably also targeting conservative Catholics, and we could see whoever else. There are several things about this that are worth knowing. First of all, there is a spin machine that's doing everything possible to minimize this story, among other things, by saying, oh, this is one of the things they're saying is, oh, well, this isn't Pentagon, this isn't military wide, this is just about the Air Force because Mikey Weinstein used to be a lawyer in the Air Force. Not true. As you just said, Jack Rich is an Army officer, so we know it's there. We had an issue with a Coast Guard admiral that's in a Breitbart column that I wrote last week, so we have yet another branch going on there. Beyond that, it is not just another thing that they're trying to say is, well, these are lower-ranking people that Weinstein was meeting with. Well, first of all, again, in this religious tolerance policy meeting that we've been talking about, there was at least one general there. I don't know how many stars he had on his shoulder. But as I also reported yesterday, the first meeting that Weinstein had in the Pentagon in February 24th, 2009, was with the Air Force Chief of Staff, a four-star general who is the highest ranking officer in the U.S. Air Force. So this goes much higher up the food chain than we've been led to believe. It was not a one-time meeting. It is instead a relationship that goes back for 4 years throughout the Obama administration, and we're seeing the fruit of it in multiple branches of the military throughout the armed forces of the United States. So, I mean, this is a serious matter that deserves congressional attention, because there are so many people of devout faith, especially conservative Christians in the military, they're not allowed to speak up for themselves in this regard, and they are fighting for all of our rights and liberty, and we owe it to them to fight for theirs.
Well, listen, I made a pretty strong radical statement, and I know a lot of people would say, well, that's going too far. But, Ken, you know, I said, look, it's time pastors tell their young men and women in the church, you should not join the military until this matter is cleared up. I guarantee you, Ken, if there was a sudden disappearance of young men and women at the recruiter's office, the Mikey Weinstein would have another job real fast. And somebody's got to play hardball here.
I understand what you're saying, and in the letter, and this is where Congress has a legitimate role, because, of course, command decisions under the Constitution, the president is the commander-in-chief. You have a strict chain of command in the military. Military decisions between one level of authority versus another is a matter that the president and his subordinates have control over. However, Article 1 of the Constitution says that Congress has power to raise and equip the armed services and to establish establish all the rules regarding military law, military crimes, and establishing matters for the discipline and good order of the military. That includes recruitment. Congress's power to raise a military, to raise an army, that is the power to recruit, to get people in. In the letter that I just referenced that three U.S. senators sent to Hagel, they made exactly the point that you just said, and that is to say, policies that discriminate against people of faith will adversely affect a military recruitment and retention, keeping those people in the military, therefore invoking Congress's core concern as to why they are in a position both to demand answers from the Defense Secretary and also that Congress has the power, if needs be, to step up through statute, through new law, to protect the rights of religious service members.
That's good. I'm glad. I'm glad they got the message. Hey, this is going to hurt recruitment. We can't let Mikey Weinstein get away with this stuff. Well, Ken, I appreciate what you guys are doing at Family Research Council, and appreciate you taking time to be with us here today. Ken Kuklowski, Director of the Center for Religious Liberty at FRC, and co-author of the book, The Blueprint, Obama's Plan to Subvert the Constitution. We're seeing that in action right now. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you being here on True News.
Thank you.
You're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast. Rick will return after this announcement.
This is Max McLean. Listen to one of the most beautiful passages in the Bible from John 14. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. From John 14. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
Hear more at radiobible.org. That's radiobible.org.
Well, you are listening to True News, your Christian source for global news, analysis, and information. True News is a listener-supported international radio broadcast on the air since 1999. Your financial support is welcomed and appreciated. Our website is truenews.com, true without an E, TRUNEWS, truenews.com. And our mailing address is Post Office Box 690069, Vero Beach, Florida, 32969. And I want to encourage you to sign up to receive my free email newsletter. You can enter your email address at the top right-hand corner of our website, truenews.com. Now, if you've been listening to this program for a long time, you will know that we have been at the forefront of forecasting and reporting the ongoing global financial system meltdown. If you're a new listener, you might want to know that information, that we were advising our radio audience many years ago that these things were going to happen with the banking system, and we're trying to prepare our audience for what we think where the elite is taking the world, which is basically a new financial system. And it's even further, it's deeper than that. It's not just a financial system. It's a new world system. That's where they're taking us. You know, at the start of this radio program in 1999, in fact, actually the year before I even went on the radio in 1998, I was telling people that the global financial system will someday be brought down through a crash of derivatives. And derivatives were a brand new form of financial instruments in the 90s. So not a lot of people were aware of derivatives. But I knew that this is what's going to bring down the system someday. In August 2004, I warned our audience to prepare for a crash of the real estate housing market and a devaluation of the U.S. dollar. It was in 2005 that we sold our office building in Texas, and Susan and I sold our home because we saw the crash coming. We knew this market is going to crash. And so we sold the properties and we got out of debt and we prepared for the crash. Now, both events have already happened, including the devaluation of the U.S. dollar. In some markets, such as Florida and Nevada, real estate prices have plunged 40 to 70%. Likewise, the U.S. dollar has been steadily devalued since 2004. Many Americans are not even aware of it. I get emails from people from time to time who say, Rick, you keep talking about the dollar being devalued. When's it going to happen? It's already happened. You're not aware of the loss of purchasing power that you've been experiencing over these past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. In 2006 and 2007, we told our audience that there would be a liquidity crisis in the banks of America, Great Britain, and Europe. The liquidity crisis came to the forefront in September 2008 with the collapse of Lehman Brothers. When MF Global melted down in October 2011, I warned that the raid on customers' segregated accounts was the first sign that the elite will brazenly steal everything that isn't bolted down. Cyprus this year was proof that not only will the elite steal everything that isn't bolted down, they'll steal the bolts too. The crash of Lehman Brothers in 2008 introduced the concept of bank bailouts. The crash of the Cypriot banking system in 2013 introduced the concept of bank bail-ins. What's the difference? In a bailout, the government takes tax money from the public to bail out the bank's creditors and investors. In a bail-in, the government arbitrarily seizes the bank deposits of the customers to bail out the creditors and investors. Within days of the stunning raid on Cypriot bank accounts, during which the IMF and the European Central Bank stole billions of euros from senior citizens, churches, and charities, we were told by EU officials that the Cypriot action is the new model for dealing with future bank failures. That means your money in the bank is now subject to immediate seizure by the government and by central banks if that bank experiences financial failure. For example, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper inserted this language on page 145 of his budget for 2013 submitted to the Parliament. And I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners, so you might not be aware that this is the language in your national budget right now. And you can look it up again, page 145 of Prime Minister Harper's budget for 2013. He said, quote, "The government proposes to implement a bail-in regime for systematically important banks. This regime will be designed to ensure that in the unlikely event that a systemically important bank depletes its capital, the bank can be recapitalized and returned to viability through the very rapid conversion of certain bank liabilities into regulatory capital." What does it mean in plain language? Canadian Prime Minister has told the Parliament, if we have any Canadian banks that suffer financial failure, we're going to steal the deposits in the bank to recapitalize the bank. Well, my guest today says that what is underway is not only an attack on our savings and our investments. He says it's an all-out war to destroy the concept of constitutional government of the people. Brandon Smith is a macroeconomic analyst. He is the associate editor of oathkeepers.org, and he's the founder of Alternative Market Project, an organization designed to help preppers network together and share ideas and information. His website is alt-market.com, alt-market.com. Brandon, welcome to True News.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, Brandon, it's breathtaking when you stop and just consider the scope of the actions that the elite have taken in recent months around the world. They are now openly stealing billions of dollars, billions of euros out of the bank accounts, and not blushing, telling the world, this is our new model. From now on, we're just going to take whatever we want.
Exactly, exactly. And if you've been in the movement for more than a few years, if you've been in the Liberty movement, the Ron Paul movement, any freedom movement for the past few years or more, you've seen the progression from zero activity or very, very small activity to economic collapse to just a massive acceleration of an attack on our constitutional rights and our Bill of Rights, which I believe is signaling an endgame scenario. I believe we're moving towards what their ultimate goal is, which is total centralization of economic power and total centralization of political power under the guise of single economic governance, single currency, and ultimately a single world government.
Brandon, this action taken by the EU and the European Central Bank, which has now become the model, of just reaching into bank accounts and stealing money. I mean, a lot of people, who know about it, they go, well, that happened over in Cyprus. That's not going to happen here. But I just read from the Canadian budget. I read the words inserted by the Prime Minister of Canada. This is a concept now that is being implemented in Western nations, which is, if we have to, we will seize your wealth by force to pay our buddies, to pay off our cronies. Do you think the public comprehends what has happened in the last 6 months?
I don't think they do yet. I don't think that most people in the mainstream quite get exactly what is happening, mostly because what they're doing is incrementalism. They're incrementally pushing these new tyrannies, economic tyrannies and political tyrannies on the people. And, obviously it's the old analogy of the frog and the boiling pot. You slowly turn up the heat. The frog doesn't know what's going on until it's too late. That's exactly what they're doing to the American people. It's incrementalism. And for anyone who thinks that what happened in Cyprus or what's happening in Europe will not happen here, they need to examine the policies of certain states in the U.S. right now, like California, which is discussing the confiscation of pension funds of state employees in order to pay off their massive debts. Also, Barack Obama has implemented a new agency that the name of it escapes me right now, some banal bureaucracy. But this agency, its purpose is to study the application of confiscating all retirement funds and using them or locking down retirement funds at a certain level and then confiscating any money you put into that fund above that arbitrary line. So the government in the United States is already discussing confiscation of private wealth. And I really think that the general public needs to understand that what happens in Europe, that's a test case. What's going on in Cyprus, that's a test case for the whole world. That's a test case for the United States. Whatever happens there is certainly, most definitely going to happen here. I guarantee it.
Yes. I told our listeners in 2008 when Barack Obama was running, I said, look, the guy's a commie. This is a Marxist revolutionary. And if he gets in power, what do commies do? They attack private wealth. I mean, they're not going to do anything different than what commies have done for the past century. They attack private wealth. And they also slaughter Christians and lock up pastors and burn down churches and all that kind of stuff. But they're going to go after private wealth. And And I told our audience in 2008, in early 2009, I said, watch for the Obamanistas to make a move on private retirement accounts. And they're at some point, they're going to need more money to finance their socialist agenda. And what we're seeing now are these proposals coming out of the Obamanista circles proposing that the federal government regulate 401ks and retirement programs, and that a certain percentage of the investment, or maybe all of the retirement investment, be invested in in government bonds, in government controlled securities. Why? Because they've got to steal the money, just like they stole the $3 trillion out of the Social Security system. Brandon, the only thing that's in the Social Security system are IOUs. The money's gone. The money was spent a long time ago. And so, you know, this raid on the wealth of the people is accelerating, because I think the regime is imploding. And they know it. And they know that they're quickly running out of time. And so really the question that has to be decided, and none of us really know where this is going to end up, but will they use brutal force to retain power, or will the regime collapse under its own weight and be replaced by something, you know, more akin to, you know, our original constitutional government? That's really where we're at right now. I think the system is imploding.
It is. It is. I would say that there are globalist interests outside of the United States that would actually like to see it implode. And the desperation created by that, I think they would like to use that to their advantage in order to institute a global economic system and global governance. So what we have here is a situation where they've sort of triggered the avalanche, and what they would like to do is to be able to mold the avalanche and direct the avalanche where they want. It doesn't really work that way. There's too many elements outside of their control, and I believe the Liberty Movement is one of those massive elements that it's an unknown factor. They can't quantify it. They don't know how to prepare for it. They don't know how to deal with us exactly. So what you'll see here is an acceleration in economic collapse, and at the same time, which I'm already seeing it after the Boston bombing, you'll start to see an extreme demonization of the Liberty Movement and anyone who's essentially pro-Constitution. You're going to see extreme mainstream demonization. And that would be their effort to try to control the unknown factor, which is the Liberty Movement, demonize us in the eyes of the common citizenry, and make us marginalize us, make us a fringe element that they can manipulate and eventually get rid of.
Brandon, what do you think went down in Boston?
Well,
what's your own personal thoughts?
I believe the evidence suggests that the official story is false. I believe that the original narrative that they were pushing was for the Patriot movement to be blamed for that particular bombing. And I think what happened, you know, my theory, because they changed the narrative so quickly, my theory is that the Liberty Movement and the independent media jumped on the situation, pointed out all the inconsistencies in the official story so quickly that they had to adjust the narrative around what we were doing, and it kind of screwed them up a little bit. It sort of threw off their game. There's a lot of people out there. There's even people in the movement that do believe that the two Chechen brothers were responsible for that attack.
Yeah, I think they were patsies. I think they were given duffel bags and told, hey, listen, we need you to take these bags out and drop them off on the sidewalk. You know, tomorrow you'll get your reward.
Exactly. And the main issue for me with those brothers and that accusation is that the FBI came out with the video footage and video stills of those two brothers, came out to the public, asked the public to identify the brothers to help the FBI capture them. Meanwhile, the FBI had been in contact with both those brothers for years. They already knew who those brothers were. Why were they going to the public, asking the public to identify them and help track them down? It makes no sense.
Well, it's like the FBI finding the identification documents of the 9/11 hijackers in the rubble at the World Trade Center, you know? I mean,
exactly.
What a coincidence. And so we see the same scenario being played out here in Boston. And it just turns out that dear uncle, what's his name, Ruslan Sanir or whatever, it just turns out that the uncle who was on television day after day talking about my horrible nephews that did this terrible thing, turns out that Uncle Ruslan used to work for a company owned by Halliburton, and he was getting direct payments from the U.S. State Department U.S. aid program, and then it turns out that he's married to the daughter of a longtime CIA operations manager. What a small world!
Yeah, isn't it interesting that the only family member of the suspects that attack their character just happens to be tied to Halliburton and the CIA. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, such a coincidence. These coincidences happen like this. Just like the Bush family just happened to be business partners with the Bin Laden family. You know, how did they know that one of the Bin Ladens was going to go squirrely and blow up the World Trade Center? I mean, come on. You know, what are the odds that you're going to be in business with the Bin Laden family?
Exactly. And I believe that what Boston represents is the beginning of a false flag trend, which matches with an operation run in Europe for about 40 to 50 years called Operation Gladio.
Yeah, in Italy.
And Operation Gladio was a series of false flag attacks on regular European citizens, blamed on far left extremists in Europe during that time. It was blamed on them, but really it was the governments, the NATO governments, including the United States and the CIA, involved bombing public centers, shooting police, mass shootings, mass bombings all over Europe, in order to get the people to give up more of their freedoms and run to the government for safety. That was the whole goal of Operation Gladio. And I believe all they've done is taken Operation Gladio, they've applied it to the United States, and they're switching out the bad guys. So instead of far left extremists, now it's going to be far right extremists, quote unquote. So I think that's exactly what's happening here, and I think we're going to see more attacks in the near future.
I do, too. And let's not leave out the involvement of the P2 Masonic Lodge in Italy that played a very important role in Operation Gladio. And, Silvio Berlusconi was one of the members. You know, how about that? You know, he ends up becoming prime minister of Italy for many years and one scandal after another. But yeah, you're right. They just brought the manual over and said, let's just change some of the characters and we'll just work the system on the American people. And, you know, Brandon, I've lost track over these years. I don't want to waste my brain cells anymore trying to keep track of all of their lies and all of their deception, you know, because you drive yourself crazy at this. But the story's always the same. There's always, you know, whether there was a drill going on the day of the event, or there was some connection. You know, you find out later that the terrorist was an informant for the CIA or MI6 or Mossad or something. It's always the same story. And it's like, how long is this going to go on? And the public is not going to stop and say, we're being bamboozled here. We're being worked over by a corrupt regime that is in control of national governments.
Yes, and I would say that this time around, the Boston bombing in particular, I would say that this time around, there has been more awareness in the public, in the general public, of the possibility of false flag than I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen this much awareness, and I think it's because the Boston narrative was so ridiculous. And there's so many inconsistencies that even average people are starting to get up and say, wait a minute, this makes no sense, you know? And I think that's a tribute to the growing effectiveness of the independent media, shows like yours, websites like mine, websites, you know, run by hundreds of Liberty Movement proponents. I think that's a tribute to our effectiveness in getting the message out to regular people to start questioning the official story and the official illusion of what's going on around them.
Well, we're making the elite work harder at lying, because their lies have a short shelf life now, and the alternative media is causing those lies they have to be altered quickly, because too many people are discovering the truth. And so, you know what? Yeah, what we're doing, Brandon, I mean, we're making them work harder at telling their lies. And we're making the media, the national mainstream news media, they're working harder at not blushing and telling the lies on TV. You know, a lot of these guys know that this stuff is not true, and they dare not question it. Or, you know, they know the way the system works. But what we have to do is just keep telling the truth and keep exposing them. You know, I was thinking many years ago, one of the people that first introduced me, helped me learn as when I started on the radio in 99, was Dr. Larry Bates. And I remember he often said to me, Rick, there's coming a day that the New World Order boys will have to streak buck naked across the world stage. And I said, Larry, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? He said, there'll come a day. He said, so many people will know what they're doing that they're going to have to make a run for it. If they're going to bring their system together, they're just going to have to streak buck naked across the world stage and just know they are just openly exposed for what they are. And they're going to make one final run to try to bring about their new world order. And that's really where it's coming to right now, Brent. It's becoming so obvious what these people are doing. They're lying, murderous, conniving thieves and thugs wearing suits. And
I agree.
That's all they are. They're just, you know, I mean, I wouldn't even call them the mafia. I have too much respect for the mafia to compare them to the mafia. I mean, the mafia at least got some code of ethics. These people don't have any ethics. And it's just a bunch of criminals in control of governments. And if this is not stopped, we are going into a time of dark ages in the world. Because with the technology that they have and the military power they have and the police power that by militarizing the police, if this slide into tyranny is not halted, then I think the world is going into a time of dark ages.
I agree, and I believe, you know, really, really these people, if you look at their underlying philosophies and what they believe in, they do have beliefs, but their beliefs are centered around a kind of psychotic narcissism, a very self-absorbed kind of sociopathic, methodology. And those kinds of people, when they're cornered in their lives, when their cons no longer work, they tend to get violent. And I believe that we are at the point, as you said, where they're having to streak naked across the stage. Their lies are not working as effectively as they were 10, 20 years ago. I mean, they were very effective. They had control of all the media, essentially, until the internet. And their biggest mistake, I believe, is the internet, allowing the internet to continue in the fashion that it has. I think they saw the internet as a sort of a tool to collect information on people, but also at the same time, it gave us a free outlet to create our own media. And we've pushed them into a corner enough to where I think they will hit that trigger point where they start to get violent. And I think we're very close to that kind of situation.
One last question. Tell us about your website, altmarket.com. What's the purpose of it? What can people gain from visiting your website?
Sure. Altmarket.com, I originally founded it in order to create sort of a gathering place for all different kinds of, there's a lot of groups, subgroups within the liberty movement. There's preppers and survivalists, there's Ron Paulers, there's Tea Party people, there's alternative currency people, all kinds of different groups. And really what I wanted to do was create a meeting hub for people to join up, find other people within their community, within their local area, or within their state, and get in touch with them and be able to start working together to build liberty community. Because ultimately, if we're all isolated from one another during this crisis, then we're not going to be very effective and none of us is going to be very safe. But if we're able to build community and preemptively, before the crisis really gets going, then we're all stronger and we're all a little bit safer. So the goal of Alt Market is just to help people in the liberty movement build communities where they live locally.
And that's good, because the psychological warfare being waged against us, you got a minority, the elite, the super elite, a minority convincing the majority that they are few in number. And
yeah.
I've often wondered, even like with China, 1.2 billion people. How does that stinking little communist party keep 1.2 billion people in subjection? It's through psychological conditioning, and that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing to the American people. They're trying to convince the American people you're few in number, you're a minority, you're separated, you're isolated. Nobody else agrees with you, and By networking together, by connecting with each other, that dispels that lie. And suddenly we realize, no, there's a lot of us that think this way. And we're all over the country. And so I commend you what you're doing, Brandon. My guest, Brandon Smith, he's the editor of associate editor of oathkeepers.org. And he's the founder of Alternative Market Project, the website alt-market.com. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
May 2013 is the month we're crossing the Jordan River to our promised land on the other side. And I want you to come along with us. For True News, it means building a video production studio and editing department to enable us to produce a video version of True News, produce special reports on DVD, and launch a True News channel on smart TVs, Roku, smartphones, tablets, mobile devices. It's a $100,000 project, and we're on our way to accomplishing it. A number of gifts arrived today to start building the studio, including $1,000 from Edward in Athens, Pennsylvania, $5,000 from Susan in San Antonio, Texas, and many other gifts ranging from $10 to $100. We thank you for every single gift. It has lifted our faith. We're going to the other side in Jesus' name. Let us know how we can pray for you too. Tell us the name of the Jordan River standing in your way, and we'll pray that you get across your Jordan River this month too. This is the month of victory for God's people.